From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Greetings, dark truth seekers, and welcome to a conspiratorial edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter Deucing, and I am joined by one of the members of the Ladies Garden Society, Stuart Bulk. Say hello, Stuart.
Actually, this week it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys.
Oh, God. And I am also joined by a member of the Ladies Garden Society as well, Mr. John Grace. Say hello, John.
Hunter Deucing is the brightest, smartest, most handsome podcaster I know.
Thank you.
Yeah, you skinny bastard.
That's true.
Yeah, what's up with the selfies?
Yeah, Vinnie Vincent. What's
Mr.
up with
Ego? Guess the nickname's got Mr. Arrowshelf getting all narcissistic about it.
Yeah.
I liked that Rick Nielsen shirt I got, and I wanted...
Hey, ladies, I've got an arrow. Which way is it pointing?
Yeah, which way is it pointing?
It's pointing towards you.
Which way is the beach? Oh.
And a year ago, the Bunny Carlo shirt would have been more appropriate.
It would have been.
you were kind of living the high carb life there. Yeah. The no exercise and the arrow shelf marathons.
Come on, yes. Let's hear it. Are you calling me fat? Are you into fat shaming? Are you calling me fat?
My body's a two, according to Donald Trump. No. Yes, I've been losing weight, and I'm looking pretty good. I shaved off my beard.
Is that a permanent thing you're going to be doing, or just for the moment you're going to see how you're
just kind of. I thought I'd try it out. I was like, I wonder what I look like without it right now.
I've got to say, I don't want to offend you. I did look at some pictures of me and you back in 2011 in Memphis. I'm like, oh, damn, man. Like, he's literally half the size now. It's like,
yep.
So, honestly, it's well done. Yeah, good on
Thank you.
And stop sending all your lost weight to me, you bastard. I'm piled on to the fucking, like, Mr. Creosote in this American next year.
Well, I did take a sample of Stuart's blood, and I went to see Michael Jackson's witch doctor, and I said, just transfer all of my fat to Stu.
That's all right. I took a sample of Saran Run Shaw's blood, and I plan to outlive all you bastards.
Yeah, what Run Run was like, what, 110 pounds his whole life?
Yeah.
Jesus, was he?
Oh, man, he was thin. He was always thin.
Yeah.
A healthy guy.
He weighed 1 pound for every year he was alive, right?
Apparently, pretty much. You know, rumor was he and Keith Richards went to the same clinic in Sweden and to get their blood.
I didn't know Sir Run Run Shaw was on heroin. Okay.
No, they were like, apparently Keith would go get his blood transfused out. I don't know how that. I mean, it's all urban legend.
Yeah.
And supposedly, Sir Run Run was going to the same clinic, and that's actually been around for decades. So they may have gone to the same private doctor in Sweden, and maybe that's what spawned the rumor. Yeah. Of course, both, Run lived a long time, and Keith is still kicking.
Yes.
Despite doing every fucking drug in South London, probably.
And snorting his father's ashes as well.
He's been sober for 20 years.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My friend Ace Frehley's been sober for 10.
10 years, 6 months, 5 days, and 8 hours. But who's keeping count? Love you, Ace. Text it tomorrow, Ace.
Text me on the show so I can tell everybody.
He's the I swear, Eddie Trunk is, you guys are totally right, he's the fat kid in high school. He's got a name drop that, you know, Ace Frehley's on his speed dial.
And because all the bullies are from high school are listening to my show.
Oh, you can totally.
Yeah, exactly.
You can totally know that back in like 83, 84 when he was starting out, and he was getting connections. He was, ringing girls from his high school going, you want to come backstage to the Whitesnake concert? Yeah, because I've got some backstage passes. Yeah, I know the guys. You know, David Coverdale's a good friend of mine. Yeah.
What was it? I was hanging out with my buddy Daniel, who listens to the show. Hey, Daniel. And we were watching that Quiet Riot documentary, and Eddie Trunk's on there, and he goes, I would be playing rock music in my car, and people would try to run me off the road and sideswipe me. And Daniel just goes, no, they fucking didn't.
They didn't.
One of the leaves, like, that guy's a liar. That never happened. I was like, yeah, people are going to risk, are going to do damage to their car just because they hate rock.
Yeah, all those jocks, bullies who were like in the Wham and Duran Duran and Culture Club were really trying to run Eddie off the road because he was blasting his UFO.
It was nothing to do with, yeah. It was nothing to do with blasting the rock music. It was like just trying to dispose of Eddie Trunk. It's like, this guy's a fucking idiot.
I did my homework. Can you imagine how annoying he was in high school?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, here's an apple. This is my good friend, the history teacher, Mr. Finkelstein.
You could tell Eddie Trunk's locker.
He's a personal friend of mine.
Yeah, you could tell.
I mean, by the way, apology to the listeners for that we've got Eddie Trunk on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eddie, okay.
It's like it's a disease. It's called Trunkism.
Trunkism.
We should make a hashtag called Never Trunk.
Never Trunk.
Oh, I'm totally doing that.
Yeah.
Like it was announced Eddie Trunk's gonna host Rocklahoma. Never Trunk.
Exactly.
just do his sayings on Twitter. That's
Eddie
what I'll
Trunk
do.
Is a self-aggrandizing fool, thin skinned, Never Trunk.
I can't play it in my car. Never Trunk.
Do you know why Eddie Trunk does all those, Rocklahomas and Rock on the Range?
I don't know. Exposure.
He needed the money.
Oh!
I tried to work it in there for you. You bastard.
I missed it. Oh. Oh, we need to right this ship, guys. So, we're actually not talking about a rock movie.
No.
We're not talking about an Andrew Dice Clay movie. We're actually talking about my favorite kung fu movie, The Manchurian Candidate, from 1962, directed by John Frankenheimer, starring Frank Sinatra, old Blue Eyes himself. We've got Lawrence Harvey, father of overrated bounty hunter Domino Harvey.
She was a woman!
Oh!
Equal pay hunter.
Oh, God. I know. She didn't make as much as Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Yeah, he makes more money.
Because he's a man.
No ice in paradise, brah.
Find the Christ, brah.
find the Christ, brah.
You've also got Janet Leigh. You've got Murder, She Wrote, Angela Lansbury. And you've got Henry Silva. Movie was written by George Axelrod, based on the novel by Richard Condon.
I actually retitled this movie when I was watching it.
What's that?
All the people smoking it actually renamed it the Lung Cancer Candidates. It was ridiculous amount of chain smoking.
You know what's weird? I don't think anybody died of lung cancer in this.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, cast. Yeah. Yeah, it's just crazy. Yeah. Oh, no, sorry.
Everybody died of cancer from the irradiated sand, right?
No, one dude, yeah. The guy who played the lead in this film.
Lawrence Harvey?
Yeah, Lawrence Harvey, he died of it, yeah. Back in the mid-70s, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know how he died.
Yeah, I was doing a bit of research on it the other night.
Cancer. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was strangely cast because his accent was so, like, it was mid-Atlantic, but he really sounded British.
Yeah,
it really didn't make a lot of sense. I mean, there was a lot of quirky things in the film, but his was the oddest casting.
You know what it kind of reminds me of? It kind of reminds me of that sort of hoity-toity way like old elites would talk, like William F. Buckley.
Yeah, it's a mid-Atlantic accent they were really trying to push on America in like the
1930s. Vincent Price had it as well.
Yeah, Cary Grant, a lot of the upper-class type actors spoke in that accent. There was almost like trying to force it on the country, like everybody would speak in that accent. And the funny thing is, the shadow radio shows that I have from Australia, they're not talking Australian, they're talking in like a mid-Atlantic. So which it's interesting,
that's
that they
because
were really trying to make this a formal thing.
Well, back in the 30s, you couldn't really say the shadow knows, cunt. You're right. Couldn't get away. Even with a Hays code, you really couldn't get away that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Crime is a weed that bears bit of beer.
The weed of crime bears bit of fruit, you old hag.
Yeah. Now get me a beer, you fucking mole.
Yeah, but it's like, but everything I've heard from Australia, like the Carter Brown mysteries, they all kind of speak in a mid-Atlantic accent. It's not British. It's not American. It's that mid-Atlantic, speaking.
Speaking of Australia, the man from Hong Kong's getting a Blu-ray release here.
Oh.
Really? Oh, shit. Oh, yeah.
Shit.
Oh, shit.
I looked up. It seems to be the only country doing it is us.
Stuart, why is Brian Trenchard Smith re-releasing it?
He needed the money. I'm on top of it, you bastard. You took me a few seconds, but I got there in the end. Oh,
but that's what she said. Well, you know, it's funny because they put the DVD out 10 years ago. I think it was put out by the Australian government. But it's only like matted to like 185. It's not like the true scope that it was filmed in.
No,
and Brian Trenchard Smith.
Yeah.
This will be the real deal, I guess, if it goes to Blu-ray.
It's showing its full scope.
Oh, yeah, I gotta order it.
Yeah.
Gotta play Sky High by Jigsaw over and over again.
Umbrella's putting it out, apparently.
Ooh.
So yeah, they're usually pretty good. I've never seen one of their films on Blu-ray anyway incorrectly framed. I've got a number of them, and they're always going to be framed in the right aspect ratio. So, yeah.
I had an issue with the syncing sound on their Slaughter in San Francisco DVD. Like, last 10 minutes, the sound is out of sync.
Okay. I now work very, very close to that store, that Umbrella discount store. What's not the name of it, but, you know. That's basically what it is. It's their overstock store. And, if I see it cheap in there for a fiver, I'll pick it up and have a look. It may be the firmware on your thing. Maybe your machine just
could
going.
Be,
like, maybe machines. Your machine's going like, I can't understand these guys. I just give up.
Well, you know, we were pushing the mid-Atlantic accent so that we could educate the masses in the proper way to sound educated.
Seriously, could you imagine trying to sound like Lawrence? Or if we even spoke like that.
Oh, people would be like, stop it, you asshole.
Yeah, you'd be called an asshole a bunch in the face because, like, they made him the most dislikable character, obviously, because he's basically sort of the villain. And he's like, mother, but he's even a Republican, mother. You know,
we can even, we disagreed, mother, that you and Johnny are the most repulsive human beings we know.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's a strange performance.
Actually, could have been the first episode of Murder, She Wrote. Sort of feels like.
The Manchurian Candidate, for those who don't know, it's a movie about a unit of soldiers in Korea. They're in the Korean War fighting Kim Il-sung. And they get captured. And when they return to America, the Lawrence Harvey character, who's sort of the stern and hated captain of the unit, is given the Medal of Honor because for bravery, they said he took out a machine gun nest and took the men to safety. But the men, including Frank Sinatra's character, Major Bennett Marco, has dreams that he and the men, Lawrence Harvey character, with the other men, including Lawrence Harvey's character, who's Raymond Shaw is his name. They're at a women's garden society meeting, but it's also like full of pictures of communist leaders, and they're talking about mind control, and they're executing commands to get Shaw to unknowingly murder people in the unit who were killed in action. And he finds out other men are having this dream, and so he strikes out to set to find out what really happened. Because they all say, what is it they say, John, when they are asked about what their opinion is of Raymond Shaw?
It's sort of like Raymond Shaw is the kindest, bravest, greatest human being I've ever known, or something like that. Yeah, and they all repeat it. It's with the same lingo, like, every time. And then Frank Sinatra and his character halfway through the film was like, but I hated Raymond Shaw.
He's
why
the most
do I
repulsive
say this?
Person yeah. I've ever met.
I can't stand him. You know, it's like,
Yeah.
And so they believe that there's a communist and it's also worth noting that Shaw is the son of he's the stepson of a powerful senator, Joseph Eisland, who's a clear cipher for Joseph McCarthy.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Played by James Gregory in a really funny performance.
Yeah, it's a great performance. It's Johnny Eisland, and he's played like a alcoholic, and which apparently McCarthy was also an alcoholic. But
that's quite a boot sound.
Yep. I think that's how he died. I think he died.
But he was right.
He was right. But so he's the stepson, and his mother, played by Angela Lansbury, is this scheming kind of Hillary Clinton type, and you're kind of wondering, okay, is this has something to do with the conspiracy? So, like, is Raymond Shaw a sleeper agent? And what's the overall plan here? So this is a conspiracy movie. You will always hear Alex Jones go, so-and-so's Manchurian candidate.
Yeah.
Fluoride in the water.
Yeah. I mean, it's part of the lingo now. It's like now if we see a president that we're suspicious of, everybody always says Manchurian candidate.
Mm-hmm.
It's being used now, like in the past couple of, I mean, the right used it for the last 8 years. The left is using it now because of Trump. It's a constant term that it's part of the pop culture now.
But Stuart, had you seen this movie before?
No.
No. Had you seen the remake?
No.
Okay, so you were totally fresh coming in.
Yeah, completely. I was like, I thought I had something to do with Manchester, England, because I was the Manchurian candidate.
Oh, no. Then they'd have all these wussy bands that still live with their mom singing all this kind of
soft
pop.
Yeah, no, it was completely new to me. I had heard about it, but it was just, it was one of those titles. I'm like, I don't think you can even buy it here on home video. It may have got a DVD release back in 2005 or 6 or something. I don't know, but I looked on my local retail stores and none of them sold except for the remake because it's got Denzel in there, of course.
Oh, the remake is terrible. Have any of you seen it? Have you seen it, John?
I haven't seen it. Elroy warned me not to see it.
It's terrible.
It's a piece of shit.
And it's very Iraq war centric. And instead of the communists, it's a private corporation, Manchurian.
Oh yeah, corporation and corporations. Oh.
Yeah, it like Jello Biafra. I'm sure
corporations suck. Yeah,
the corporations.
It was actually called the Alternative Tentacles Candidate.
Yeah.
East Bay Ray will not get his money, neither will Claus Fluoride.
neither will that Blackie on the drums.
it's not a good movie, and it's a pretty tepid remake. And it's very much a product of the Bush era, you know?
Yeah.
And in that regard, like none of those movies like Syriana or any of those have aged well at all.
They didn't age the week they were released.
No, I know they were
off like retarded left wing nonsense.
They were awful when they came out. But like those are movies that like nobody talks about. Like,
hey, is George Clooney left wing?
Oh
no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I was about to say like that's a joke, right?
And he likes boys from what I've heard.
Oh really? He doesn't like Iranian women, whatever the hell she is.
No, she's a beard.
Another beard. Eh? Oh.
You and I are the only conservatives here. We know the truth.
He's a boy banger. But no, I mean, he likes young men. Supposedly, rumors about his homosexuality.
Well, do you know why young men have sex with George Clooney?
Because they need a double.
Hey, there you go.
He'd say the same thing for his beards, which I'm sure are on salary.
Oh, yeah. Oh really? Yeah. George Mooney, we should call him.
No, basically, Mr. No Box Office. We've constantly been.
Oh, I know. People go like,
he's never had a hit movie sold on his name.
George Mooney is one of the last of a star of classical demeanor. It's like, yeah, if you could say the word star, if anybody fucking watched his movies. Nobody saw Up in the Air. Nobody's seen what's the
Ides of March.
The American. Nobody saw that. Nobody saw the Ides of March. None of that shit.
Men who stare at goats.
Nobody sees.
The Men Who Stare at Goats.
That's the ISIS documentary. Oh, that's the Men Who Fuck Goats. Sorry.
No, it's the Men Who Stare Longingly. It's the Men Who Stare Longingly at Goats.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, you know, I was thinking the other day, what would be a good film for us to cover would be Team America.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Matt Damon is apparently, he was complaining that people say that whenever he gives an opinion. He was like, is that all people think of what I have to say?
Well, they should.
Well, when I was talking to Cole, Cole and I would talk, and every time Matt Damon came across, he'd always go, Matt Damon. I'm going, what are you doing, Cole? He goes, have you seen Team America? I said, no. He goes, so you have to watch Team America to get what I'm saying. I'm like, oh, okay. And I watched that, pissed myself laughing. Oh, that film was fucking hysterical.
The Film Actors Guild fag.
Nice going, fag. Great job there, fag. You really showed them, didn't you, fag?
People will say, that's a good fag.
My son was watching South Park, because I'm a very open-minded parent like that. And, they were watching one of the Starvin' Marvin episodes. I was pissing myself laughing.
Starvin' Marvin.
I think it was the second one when they have Starvin' Marvin in space. They call him a little click-click. Fucking pissed my pants on Earth, that. They call him click-click.
Oh, my God.
This show's so fucking out there.
I forgot. I've forgotten just how crazy South Park could be. Like, because it was so shocking at the time, and now,
years on, I still see some of that stuff, and I go, Jesus, they got away with that back in 97, 98. It's insane.
Yeah, in this country, they were airing it after, 11 p.m., yeah. So they could get away with a lot more, even on cable. Yeah,
it got a late night time slot here.
I remember
people
got really pissed about Kenny getting killed in every episode.
Mm.
A lot of people were really pissed about that. They'd go, oh my gosh, it totally trivializes death, because, and stuff like, I remember hearing that a lot when I was a kid.
Yeah, it's just a couple of gay guys moving coasters around.
Yeah, of course. That's all it is.
That's all it is.
Playing with construction tape. Yeah.
All right, let's get back to this.
All right, but Stuart, so this was your first time seeing this, this conspiracy thriller.
Mm.
What were some of your thoughts on it?
Okay. I watched it up on the big screen, so I wanted to get that experience for the first time. I didn't want to have it restricted to the lowly 65-inch TV downstairs.
God forbid.
Or God forbid the 4K TV, so yeah. Watched it on the big screen and sat there and cursed out whoever's name when I started watching it, going, oh, fuck. 127 minutes of this, you got to be kidding me. Sitting there going, what is going on? And by the time I got to the end of the film, I said, this is absolutely brilliant. What a fucking great movie. I mean, it wasn't being spoon-fed to me straight away, so, which is a lazy attitude towards me. That's all my fault. But as it went along, I said, wow, great performances. Brilliantly written. What a story to come up with, whoever it was. I forgot.
It was based on a novel by Richard Condon, and George Axelrod wrote the script.
What a story. I mean, he couldn't even... I could never have dreamt something like that up. I mean, just absolutely brilliant. And really, I think of the Frank Sinatra films I've seen, I think it's by far his best performance. I haven't seen other ones like The Man with the Golden Arm, so I couldn't say. I've heard that's one of his best as well. But that, Manchurian Candidate was definitely my favorite one of his. And I like some of the racist elements. Oh, racist, man. The racist, like with Henry Silver as the Korean.
No.
Yes, I work for you. Very good job.
Yeah, I that almost seemed like a surrealistic bit of casting, because I think they could have found some Asian actor in Hollywood by then.
Yeah, Mickey Rooney.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mickey Rooney.
Sidney Toller was retired, apparently, or dead.
They couldn't have gotten Bert Kwok from the Pink Panther films?
He only works in British productions.
Oh, really? Okay. Technically,
he's an English actor, because he's from the London, London stage, I believe.
Yeah. Okay.
But speaking of Henry Silva, there's this scene in the movie, because he gets hired as Raymond Shaw's valet,
It was a valet. Does he call him a valet? I can't remember.
Yeah, he calls him a valet in the Mid-Atlantic.
He's like, I need a valet.
I need a valet.
And so Marco goes to visit Raymond to talk to him about his dreams, and Henry Silva answers the door and immediately is greeted by a fist to the face from Frank Sinatra. Yeah. And what ensues is what Frankenheimer and Axelrod and Sinatra claim is the first karate fight in Western cinema. And it could be, like we talked about, yeah, that, how, and the aborted attempt at this show. We talked about how, John, you said it might actually be the first attempt. I was like, if anybody's going to know, it's John.
Yeah, only I think karate had only been seen on television and TV shows like Of All Things I Love Lucy, which had Ed Parker and another guy doing like a demo, and there's some other, and mostly played for laughs. And there was a private eye show, and I still haven't found the name of it, that apparently had a character who was a black belt in karate, and they had some fight scenes. But as far as movies go, it had never really been exploited in films. Mm. I think a Sam Fuller movie, Shock Corridor, a waitress mentioned she hit somebody with a karate chop. And that's like the earliest evidence I've seen of that stuff.
Didn't Yul Brynner do a roundhouse kick in Magnificent Seven?
Wouldn't have been karate. Yeah. It would have been what, Savate, French foot boxing, which I don't know if that actually came from.
I'm just kidding. I think it'd be funny.
Who knows?
Yul Brynner did any sort of karate.
I heard that Cary Grant did a Hadouken in North by Northwest.
Well, if you watch those James Cagney movies like Blood on the Sun, they're like judo exploitation. Like, he's always showing off his judo skills.
Did you know they're making a remake of Rear Window?
What?
Yeah. You know he's going to be cast as the lead?
Yeah.
The guy who's holed up in a wheelchair with a broken leg, Axl Rose.
He's going to have he's going to see Buckethead's going to kill somebody.
Yeah, he's going to see. He thinks it's
Buckethead killing Eddie Trunk.
There's a guy in a Michael Myers mask and a Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket on his head. Can it kill you? Yeah, whatever, kid. Yeah, they hang up on him. Cops don't believe him.
Yeah. And they have a – he gets texts from
– I miss those old 1950s cops that don't believe anything.
Yeah, whatever, kid. Go back to your parents. Yeah.
There's a blob. It's eating people. Whatever. You've been drinking.
The kid's played by Steve McQueen.
Yeah.
It's like the most charismatic teenager ever.
With his widow's peak and years of drunkenness already aging him to 30.
Oh, so that's what my problem is. Shit, I got to keep drinking. All right.
So
I'm getting bloated and old. I'm old.
I'm old.
But yeah, it's a pretty over the top kung fu scene, but it kind of adds to the surreal strain. I mean, not kung fu, karate scene.
Right.
But it kind of adds to the surreal. The surreal nature of the film.
I got a piece of trivia.
I think they wanted something weird.
I got a piece of trivia about this film as well. I just found out that everybody who was greeted by Frank Sinatra, they were with a fist in the face.
Yeah, that was familiar territory to them.
Yeah, pretty much. That was like Sammy Davis Jr. was relegated to just a bit part in Ocean's 11 because he was in the Bad Books with Frank Sinatra at the time, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, that's why he was... I was reading a book called The Rat Pack, written by some guy. I can't remember his name. Levy? Someone, Levi.
Yeah, there's like 10 or 15 of those books out. So
yeah,
it's
apparently at the time, Sammy was in the Bad Books with Sinatra. That's why his part in Ocean 11 was just basically as a 5-minute cameo, and that was it.
He was like, hey, Sammy, you're dabbling in that there Satanism.
Yes.
Better stop, better knock it off. Better get back to the chosen people.
Sinatra didn't call him the Jew Negro.
The Jew Negro.
He's going to play the garbage
man. He called him the Satanic Jew Negro.
It sounds like the name of a Kenneth Anger short film.
Yeah, the Satanic Jew Negro, by Kenneth Anger.
It's funny, if you ever watch those Rat Pack live shows, what few exist on film, it's always Frank's. I mean, it's like the most politically incorrect show ever.
Oh, yeah.
He always picks up Sammy and goes, I'd like to thank the NAACP for this award. And Sammy would be like, put me down, Frank!
I think I mentioned before, I've got that Live at the Sands CD. And Dean Martin just unleashes like, oh, I heard Sammy Davis Jr. is here, but I can't see my, you need to smile, Sammy. It's just,
they probably did that on TV for all I know. They got it was so much back then. It's
those celebrity roasts were fantastic. The Dean Martin ones.
Oh yeah,
it's like fantastic.
Yeah, great stuff. And they, but it, like with this film, I think it was out of circulation for a while because of the JFK assassination. And I think Sinatra had a pull because I know when it aired on Cinemax and like when I saw it for the first time, like 1988 or 87. It was like a big deal that they were showing it.
Well, that was like suddenly that we spoke about in the
that was another one. Yeah, that's public domain.
Public domain now because it got pulled for so long because of the JFK assassination. It was too starkingly similar to what happened with JFK. Yeah. So, yeah, it got pulled. And, yeah, now it's basically public domain.
Right.
Good movie as well, by the way. But,
definitely.
We should start a new conspiracy theory that Sinatra killed JFK. Sinatra,
yeah.
Who was that other one? Who was that mobster who had him killed? Apparently,
Sammy Giancola.
Is there any credence to the what I've heard that that Frank Sinatra tried to have Howard Stern killed?
Probably is.
I've never heard
that's
of it.
That's a real story.
I've never heard of that.
I can see that happening.
Have you heard that story, John?
Yeah, I what's his name dropped it on Kumia's show.
Yeah,
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, he said that Sinatra tried to have Howard Stern killed, and that the people killed the wrong guy or something.
I don't know if they killed the wrong guy, but Sinatra was always mobbed up, so nothing's hard to believe.
Mm-hmm.
He was always mobbed up.
Oh yeah, there was a documentary that came out back in the early to mid '80s called Crime Incorporated, 4-part, absolutely brilliant series. And they spoke to a lot of mobsters who were now. Back then in hiding and, using disguises and whatever. And there was a very famous picture of Frank Sinatra with a whole bunch of mobsters. And at a Senate inquiry, Sinatra was asked, he goes, oh, I don't know who they are. They just turned up in the picture and I didn't want to be rude. So I just got a picture with them. Like, bullshit. He knew who they all were. Like, New York Godfathers. It's like, he knew. He's just not going to lie. Who's really going to question Frank Sinatra?
Nobody knows. I mean, on those Dean Martin roasts, they were joking about his mob ties.
Well, were they?
How many, like, Don Rickles and every other comedian would always have that joke. Frank saved my life one time. He said, okay, he's had enough after I was being kicked in the face. So.
I mean, you can't tell me those guys working back in Las Vegas in the 50s and 60s didn't have any sort of mob ties.
At
least they didn't cross. You can't tell me they didn't cross paths with a mob back then. No freaking way. Of course they did.
Yeah, okay. It's pretty well known.
I mean, you got to wonder if Dean Martin had any as well, being Italian. I mean, you don't know.
You know, they were behind him with like Jerry Lewis, but then they were always like, "How can we get rid of his monkey?" They always called Jerry Lewis his monkey, and then we're like, "We're gonna get rid of the monkey. We just want Dean.
We knew Dean was the money.
That's where the money was. Is Dino singing? And they thought, well, he could carry movies by himself. He doesn't need Jerry Lewis.
But so. Moving on from old Blue Eyes, Angela Lansbury. Oh, yes. Angela Lansbury plays Lawrence Harvey's mother, but she's only a couple years older than him.
She's like 36 in this film.
It's like Angelina Jolie being Colin Farrell's mother in Alexander.
Yeah, it's even worse. But I mean, it's also like because Angela Lansbury is just like, she was always old looking.
Yes, so, exactly what I was going to say.
She has that kind of chipmunk. Cheeks, you know?
Mm-hmm. So
chipmunk cheeks.
Yeah, she's kind of got the puffy cheeks.
For somebody you put on film, you know, like nowadays they only put skinny people on film.
Yeah.
With a certain body weight and just the way they're going to look on film. Back then, you would put more normal people and someone like an Angela Lansbury who might just seem like plain Jane in real life is going to look like an old woman on film.
Yeah.
Well, that was Carrie Fisher in Empire Strikes Back where she was told she was too fat. It was like, you're kidding
me. She was.
Nah, she's not that.
Even as a kid, I thought, well, what's happened to Princess Leia? She's,
She was in that that David Cronenberg movie, Map of the Stars, Maps to the Stars, uh-huh. as herself. Uh-huh. And she's huge in it. Like, I mean, and
Carrie Fisher was complaining about losing weight for Star Wars. I was like, well, God, I mean, can you, fans would be like, what the fuck happened if they saw her like that?
She should be thanking her nutritionist because it saved her life.
Yeah, I mean, she was huge in that.
Really? I've never seen her this big.
She's looked monstrous in the past 10 years.
Oh, yeah, I've seen her older. She's, you know, gotten a bit, I mean, she's getting older.
No, if anything, J.J. Abrams did her a favor, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, really? What, is she in the latest Star Wars?
Yeah, she does.
I haven't seen it.
No, don't bother. You just watch the original and Empire Strikes Back back to back, and it's like watching this one.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay,
that's the same plot.
Yeah,
same plot.
Kind of like Terminator Genesis. Just watch Star Wars.
Yeah,
Terminator.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I watched Terminator Genesis again. I really enjoyed it. I still like it.
No, I didn't mind it. I was totally surprised. I did not mind it at all.
Yeah,
and I'm a huge fan of the original. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, very much.
I mean, who isn't our age who watched that when they were kids?
God, like, I wouldn't sweat in the theater when it came out in '84. I was like just blown away by it. But 3 and 4 are pieces of shit. We'll never watch them again.
Yeah, 3 or 4 are awful. Yeah. I can't stand them. Terminator Genesis was superior to those two.
Oh, easily.
Yeah,
didn't realize.
I thought some things were really well done. So I was totally surprised.
Oh my God! I've mentioned before. I mentioned again the two Arnolds fighting each other at the start. Holy shit! That was like a fucking geek out moment of the highest order for me. Yeah, for sure.
Arnold's swan song to the big screen, probably.
I hope so. That's a really good way to go out.
He should go out on that. He keeps wanting to make an old King movie. Nobody's going to finance it. Because Terminator Genesis didn't do very well domestically. It barely, I think, went above 90 million, and they needed it to go over 100 to continue the series.
Yeah, so they've nixed that plan to do another one, haven't they? What a shame. But
yeah, so now you're going to get the him doing direct-to-video movies.
Mm, like Maggie?
Like,
well, he's taking over The Apprentice.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He's
Oh, really? Oh, there you go.
You're fired. Damn it. You're fired. Go to hell. I'll be back. He'll work in all of his old terrible movie
characters. Oh, it's gonna be horrible.
You know he's gonna ride a chopper to the office, so he'll go, "Let's get to the chopper," just so he can say that shit, you know.
Yeah.
So it'll be unwatchable. But I'll probably watch 3 episodes.
Like he'll get mad at somebody, he'll be like, "Let off some steam.
Let off some steam. Late to the party."
Yeah. Like, oh, he'll see, like, you know, they'll have, like, Carl Weathers on, and he'll be like, "Carl, you son of a bitch."
Pushing pencils.
The only thing is, Carl Weathers will still be in great shape, and Arnold will be well, you know.
I know. Carl Weathers is still in pretty good shape.
Oh, yeah.
If you've seen him.
For sure,
yeah. He maintains Arnold, Arnold still works out, but doesn't, because it was, his physique was dependent on the roids, so it's just, he's not going back to that.
So, John, when did you first see Manchurian Candidate?
Cinemax, 1988, I think. Mm-hmm. I taped it off recorded it, the timer recording, because it had rarely been seen, and I don't think it was easy to rent. You know, back then you were at the mercy of renting videotapes. Mm-hmm. You can go consult our VHS memory show for that. Mm-hmm. You could not afford these movies when they were released on video, because they were like $59.95 if you were.
Yeah, they weren't designed. They were like, it was designed to rent, not to.
It was for the stores, but it was all for the stores, and so when stuff came on Cinemax, you would tape them, and I recorded it, watched it, did it 2-hour speed, which was a sign of respect and interest. And I watched it one afternoon and was blown away. Like, I didn't know. I thought it was going to be like a James Bond type of thing. And no, it was not. It was like this. I did not expect this black comedy with these really, at the time, I didn't even know it was called surrealism elements and stuff. I loved it. The karate fight I thought was terrific, especially for the time. And so many suspense scenes are perfectly done. They still rip shots off from this movie in movies today.
What's really gripping about this movie is that from the get-go, it kind of sucks you in. You get this happening in Korea, and then you have these dream sequences that are really unsettling with these ladies talking about mind control.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. And you see these like communists sitting around like from various countries, you know, you have a dead-eyed, you know, Lawrence Harvey strangling these guys who are grinning just without a second thought. And What's crazy is, like, you know, the shots will change. You'll have the ladies sitting down, and then you'll have communists sitting down.
Yeah, it'll switch back
and forth. It must have been a real pain in the ass. And then when the black soldier has the dream, it's all black ladies. It's a black ladies' garden society, you know.
Quite a job for the continuity editor.
They said that was the hardest thing to shoot and put together was that sequence.
Oh, I bet. What I love is one of the communist generals was Reggie Nalder, better known as Barlow in the Salem's Lot miniseries, so you see him without all the Nosferatu makeup.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's the kind of Scarface guy, like real tall, the kind of sunken-in face.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've got to go back and check it out, because I've seen Salem's Lot. I love it.
He played Barlow.
In the David Soul one?
Yeah,
from 79. Oh, wow. I've got to check it out.
And yeah, it's tremendous. And at that time, I was getting into like dark comedies, like early Kubrick, and I was really into Heathers. That was the big young person's movie at the time. Mm-hmm. Like I liked all that kind of dark, edgy comedy. So seeing in a movie that old was quite a trip. You know, when you're educating yourself on films.
See, the
and everything.
Thing is with me, I don't find this film funny. I don't see it as a comedy personally.
It is a comedy though. You're, that's the
really,
odd
I,
thing.
That's you're, what I can't work it out. I just, there was a time, I think it was a couple of chuckles I had in there, but nothing that would constitute it being classed as a comedy. Not in my eyes, anyway.
No, it wasn't obvious to me until I saw it a month ago. Elroy had it as part of his program, and he introduced it as a dark comedy, and he was totally right. And he also said it was, like, kind of predated the approach with movies of making them, like, live-action comic books, which it kind of is.
But see, the thing is, I had to process all that was going on throughout the film, so I'm probably missing a lot if I go back and watch it,
which
I will.
There's a lot of... Yeah, it wasn't as much there when I first watched it, but now that I watch, I was cracking up at so much stuff. Like with Janet Leigh talking to Sinatra on the train, and she's speaking in
that's a really fucking weird scene. Because I'm watching that, and I was thinking, like, if I was Frank Sinatra, if I was Frank Sinatra, I'd probably be used to having women throw themselves at me. But if I was just some dude on a train and a girl just was like talking to me like that, I would be like, is this bitch going to rob me? Like, you know,
really? Like, I wouldn't be. Yeah. I'd be like, does this chick get my pants down? Because that's what I'm waiting for.
But
especially
just,
with Janet Leigh,
like,
that helps.
I would be thinking, what else is going on here? Like, this girl must be crazy or something. That would have been my concern. Because their meeting on the train is... It's meant to be kind of like a sexy scene, I think.
Yeah.
You know, you have two attractive people kind of meeting on a train, but it's very sudden because, like, she tells him soon afterwards, she basically told her fiance they're not together anymore and she wants to be with him. I was like, this is moving pretty quick.
Yeah, really.
It's almost like it's implied she's like his handler in military intelligence.
Yeah.
When I had mentioned this movie on my webpage, like Zolly Becker had mentioned that, he goes, I think she was like a spy.
Yeah, that was
and I go, I totally agree.
Yeah, that was some film critics brought up. They said that it felt like the it was implied that she was an agent of some sort.
She was speaking like in code to him, and he's all sweaty and she's like acting like she's interested in him, so it's all she's his handler.
I'll tell you one thing, you will never see a scene like that again that long. I mean, that goes for about, 6 minutes, I'd say? You would never see a scene. These days, be like, cut that down to 90 seconds and edit that thing back and forth between them like crazy. There's very, very few films these days have long establishing scenes like that. It's because the crowds, the crowds these days are just dumb. They just sit there and just fidget and...
It's because movies media has kind of conditioned us to be used to shorter
MTV.
Stuff drives me crazy. I took my kid to see the Ice Age movie today. You talk about just being assaulted with this quick, near subliminal editing. It's just crazy, and it's what makes seeing movies in theaters tiresome to me. And we went to see The Secret Life of Pets last week. Same thing to me. It was just like, it's driving me nuts.
Yeah, because kids are, you said kids are conditioned that way to watch films. And I will say this. This is going to sound really odd, but I watched an Iron Maiden concert I've got on DVD here. I think it might be...
is it the Flight 666?
No, not that. That's the documentary. No, I like that a lot. I think it was Rock in Rio from the late 90s.
Yeah, and when Bruce came back to the band.
Yeah, I think it was that. And that was, I had to turn it off. I couldn't watch. It was one quick cut after. They actually advertised it's got more edits in it than Lord of the Rings. I'm like, oh, God. So I watched it. It was a cut of Steve Harris, then Dickinson, then Yannick Gurz. I'm like, we're all in the space of about 2 seconds. I'm like, okay, this is it. I can't watch it. I had to turn it off. I can't take that very quick editing. I just hate it. So
don't watch some of those Frank Zappa concert films. Holy shit!
No, I don't intend to.
He does that almost on purpose.
is that the stuff like Baby Snakes, where like critics used to thrash those?
Yeah, it was. I forget. There's this
200 Motels.
Yeah, it's not that one. There's one he did. I forget what it's called, but I remember watching it, and he does this editing in there where it's almost like designed to give you a seizure.
I've never gotten into Zappa, so I guess I should.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, here's the thing about Frank Zappa is there are Frank Zappa albums you'll probably like, and there's a lot you won't like because he has albums that are really entertaining and accessible, and he has albums that are really bizarre and myopic, you know, so it kind of depends on which record you're listening to.
I just say he's more of an interesting character to hear about or read about than he is to actually listen to.
There's a few albums you might enjoy, but I don't know of anybody who calls themselves a Frank Zappa fan who enjoys his entire body of work.
You gotta be crazy. You'd have to be
crazy. If they say they do, they're lying. You know? Yeah. You know.
And the funny thing Alice Cooper was saying about Frank Zappa was everyone thought he was on drugs and acid and like never touched a thing.
No, he was he drank espresso all day, and I guess they buried him with his espresso machine, which I thought was a pretty funny fact. So it's like they said they would have to he would just drink espresso all day long.
Yeah,
while he worked, and he smoked, and smoking's what did him in. But you know,
it's the only good thing. Frank
I'm sure he would insist that's not the case.
The only good thing Frank Zappa did was tobacco. The only thing Frank Zappa did was find Alice Cooper and give them a break.
That's the best thing he did.
Yeah, it is.
Well, we keep moving with this Manchurian candidate. The only thing I had a problem with, and if you guys clear it up, I'd appreciate it. Why did the Lawrence Harvey character keep playing cards?
They used the cards as sort of a code thing when they were brainwashing him.
Mm-hmm.
So the cards...
Yeah.
Yeah, well, when the twist comes at the end, like it's obvious that the cards were used as a code. They were like a trigger card.
So he had no idea that by playing cards he could be triggered off to do things.
Right, like he's
right. Like he was brainwashed.
The solitaire, like saying play some solitaire in a way that gets him going, and then the Red Queen is what kind of the gripper, you know, that kind of makes it to where he's totally open to suggestion.
There was that one part where he goes into the bar and he goes and buys a drink, and he's playing cards, and that bartender's talking.
Yeah, and the bartender's obviously a commie agent, you know.
You reckon?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I thought was implied.
I think the bartender says something like, oh, why don't you go jump in a lake? I told him, why don't you go jump in a lake to that other people who's speaking to him, and he just walks out and goes jumps in a lake.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. I've got to watch. See, I really have to watch.
That's the humor.
Again.
That's the comedy. There it is.
That's what I mean. I was trying to take so much of it in and decipher what was happening that I just completely missed a lot. I do want to buy this on Blu-ray if it's available.
I will say, and you know, the sale might be over. I don't know. It might still be going on, but Criterion has this, and the Barnes & Noble Criterion sale is going on. It might be ending when this drops, but you can get the Criterion Blu-ray for 50% off at Barnes & Noble, so it'll be like $20 or something.
Kind of doesn't help me living over here, does it, boy?
No, it doesn't, but I'm just talking to anybody else out there.
Yeah, okay. Good luck to him. Yeah. No Arrow release of this that you know of?
No Arrow release that I know of.
Yeah, you might have to get on to that Mr. Arrow shelf. I see that they are releasing a version of Raising Kane, the Brian De Palma film, but with two cuts on there. The theatrical and De Palma's director's cut, which is supposedly very vastly different.
I didn't know that.
Shout Factory or Scream Factory, whatever they call themselves, are doing it. With two cards. Mm-hmm. Arrow are still yet to announce what's going to be on there, so they may have both versions. I hope so. If not, well, I'll have to go the Scream Factory one. Okay. Yeah, because I do want that second cut. I mean, I like Raising Kane a lot. I saw it in the theaters when it came out, but it felt disjointed. Just something didn't sit right. So, but apparently the director's version is, you know, vastly different. So I'm excited to see that.
Yeah,
and that ending, which I won't give away. Holy shit. Fucking shook me
up. I've never seen it.
That ending shook me up for days when I saw it.
John's not a De Palma fan, I don't think.
No, I like his 70s stuff.
Yeah.
I love The Fury.
Yeah, The Fury's great.
The Fury's great.
Yeah, I love The Fury. I like
that's
Carrie.
Better than Carrie.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I like it is. I think The Fury is his best film. I like Sisters. I mean, I like his stuff up to Scarface pretty consistently.
Did you like Blowout?
I like Blowout.
Yeah, Blowout's brilliant. Blowout. Yeah. I like Dressed to Kill a lot.
Yeah, Dressed to Kill is wacky,
it's
fun.
Good.
It's like an American Giallo.
And the killer's a tranny.
Ah! Trigger me.
She needed the money.
Why are you one of those trans testicles?
No, Raising Cain, it's kind of a throwback to the De Palma 70s style.
The only one of De Palma's I haven't seen in that earlier period was, or two I haven't seen, was one called Home Movies. I never did see that.
That one.
That's his most obscure, I dare say. And
I remember that. De Niro, right? De Niro? Oh, no, that's no. Keith Gordon.
Yeah, Keith Gordon. Yeah. No, De Niro was in Hi Mom.
Hi Mom, I'm Mom.
Greetings.
Yeah. Hi Mom, I'm
Greetings.
Home.
They're probably my two favorites of his. Greetings is really, really high up on my list of De Palma films.
Get to Know Your Rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
Was that
retitled as The Swap or something? Was it a very, very early De Palma film?
Swap is a different film. It's an early De Niro film that was re-edited by Canon Films to have like Sybil Danning in it.
Oh, okay. Then.
What about Body Double? What do you guys think of that?
That's the one I haven't seen.
Oh, you had Stuart.
No, I've never seen it. And actually,
Stuart, like, we got to do that on the show.
Okay. Because Umbrella's got a gun for $5 at my local store on Blu-ray.
I liked it when I was 12. I think I rewatched it a couple of years ago. I thought it was kind of dumb.
I think it's really fun and out there. It's not I wouldn't call it a smart movie, but
it hasn't aged well for me because it's got like what's her name? Melanie Griffith.
Yeah.
Playing the porn star. And she's like she won't shave her pussy, and I'm like, oh my god, they all do that now.
Yeah,
they wax it for God's
sake. Yeah, and. But it's fucking, it's weird. Like, it has this, like, Frankie Goes to Hollywood sequence where music video sequence, which is so, and it's just violent and gross.
I don't think De Palma knew they were gay.
Yeah, I don't think he did either.
No. I don't think he knew. I mean, watch it, judge for yourself. I don't think he knew they were gay.
But there's the scene involving a power drill that's pretty crazy. But, and it
has Greg
Henry giving a hilarious performance, but
Barbara Crampton cameo in the first 5 minutes is pretty good.
Oh yeah, just Stuart. We should do that one on the show.
I'll go to that store and see if they got the Blu-ray still for a fiver. $10, I'll grab it.
Unfortunately, it's pretty worthless in the last 20 years. To Paul.
Yeah, no, totally. He hasn't made it.
Oh
decent.
Fuck! I actually saw that Mars one in a theater. And
I haven't seen a lot of his later stuff. I saw Snake Eyes, which was pretty lame.
Black Dahlia is terrible.
Black Dahlia was a piece of shit.
I wanted to like that so much because
I was excited and I was like, oh, De Palma, it has William Finley in it. You know, I was like, I was ready to love it and it sucked.
Yeah. My friend who wrote the book wasn't pleased with it either.
I'm not going to say anything mean about it. They treated me really well.
Yeah, no, they paid him great. That's what he said. You know, he said his book sold great. It sold better after that movie came out.
I bought the book because I was like, there's no way. This book has to be awesome because this movie's a piece of crap.
Yeah, he was. He told me a lot of stories about the making of that. He kind of, you know, I can't really say what he thought of De Palma because it's not nice, but it's. You know, basically he agrees was once a great filmmaker.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'll just leave it at that. But he told me a lot of stories that I swore to not repeat.
Yeah.
I'm right wing. You are? Me too, buddy.
That's all it takes.
You'll never leave that one down. That's too funny.
Well, he's a riot, man. He could have been a comedian if he wasn't a novelist easily. But what he said about this film, he was pointing out it was a comedy and it was, you know, the funny thing was he couldn't sit through it. He left halfway through the screening. He was done. And I saw him at the bar later and he's like, I just couldn't sit through it again. I've seen it too many times. I just can't put up with it. You know, he can't even make it through half the films he screens.
Yeah, he goes, like you said, he leaves during them.
He goes to sleep in his van or something.
In Nashville, he went and slept in his truck. He was like, I couldn't sit through it. I've seen it so many times. I just slept in my truck.
Is this a sort of film?
That's a fun movie to watch.
Yeah. Is Manchurian Candidate the sort of film, upon multiple screenings, something you'll find more and more of each time?
I liked it. I liked it
I think
more.
So.
Yeah? I've liked it more every time I've seen it. And it's just, it's a movie that, like, you watch it and it just grabs you. Even though I knew what was going to happen, I was totally sucked into it watching it again. And that, you know, I thought we should, I picked it up at the Criterion sale and I was like, oh, you know, I want to watch this one again. And, you know, I thought it would be a good subject for the show.
I mean, I kind of, I picked the ending. It was like, okay, I know what he's going to do.
Yeah, yeah. You know, here's the thing. It's not even like, I wouldn't even call it an unpredictable movie, but it's still like, it's so well done that you just want to see it. I think even, I've never really cared too much about spoilers because I always want to see how the movie does it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to see how they're going to tell the story. And if they'll, because really it's all about how a story's told. It's not really what happens, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
That's why anything promoted on the twist, like an M. Night Shyamalan movie or The Crying Game, is a piece of shit.
Well, yeah, because those movies you don't want to see them again. Because the movie, you might see them, okay, you'll see it once, and then you go, oh, that was so shocking. And then you might watch it again, and it's like, oh, it's totally different. Then you never watch it again. Why would you? There's no reason.
When I went and saw The Crying Game in the theater, I picked it up straight away. I'm like, really? This is the big twist everyone's talking about? You're going to be shitting me. It's just blatantly obvious, but whatever.
It's a chick with a dick.
I never saw The Crying Game, actually.
I've never seen it.
I already know the twist, so I'm like... Oh.
All the people I found annoying in college were loving it, so I didn't see it.
Out of spite. Well, I mean, it's a good movie, don't get me wrong. I mean, the twist is probably the least of it, really. I mean, the actual film itself is very, very good. Stephen Ray, I thought it was great in the movie. And old Glass Eye himself, Forest Whitaker. He was good as well. His accent is
Forrest
shit.
Forest Whitaker,
yeah. Yeah, his accent was terrible. He can't pull off an English accent to save his life.
Does he ever say to Stephen Ray, I know.
No, he plays a British soldier. He's like, oh, well, just come here to take a piss. I mean, he doesn't do as good as me, but... Yeah, they could have really got a man of color who was British for that part. He didn't need Forest Whitaker. So.
They didn't have an Idris Elba to put on the map then to be the hero of Nerd.
Okay, anything else you want to bring up about Manchurian Candidate?
I was actually curious why Frankenheimer seemed to go nuts like in the 1980s. Like, he was making these really graphically violent films. You couldn't tell it was the same director of stuff like The Manchurian Candidate or The Train. And I had mentioned this to Elroy, and he said that he thinks that Frankenheimer lost his mind because he was with Robert Kennedy the day Robert Kennedy was assassinated.
Oh, okay.
He drove him in the car that morning, or he was in the car with him that morning, and when he was killed later the day, he said Frankenheimer's career never recovered. He kind of went crazy.
Yeah, because he made some weird movies like Island of Dr. Moreau and, you know, Reindeer
and
Games.
Those were pure mercenary work for... Weinsteins.
Even
I remember seeing Ronin back in the late 90s.
Massively overrated film by many friends of mine.
Oh, totally. Everybody's like, oh, that movie's badass. I remember seeing it and thinking it was pretty lame.
One good car chase and a bunch of boring bullshit and a really boring female lead.
I thought Andersonville was decent, his TV movie about the Confederate prison camp.
And, I didn't see that.
Speaking of boring, we also got the French Connection 2, which was just a miserable movie to sit through. I did not like that.
Yeah, that's a
45-minute heroin addiction sequence with Gene Hackman. Just what a blight, really, on the first one. Actually makes the first one even better than what it really is, and that is a fantastic film to start with. So,
Well, I agree. I would say Andersonville is pretty decent, but it's kind of like Gettysburg or some of those other Ted Turner productions. But it's an interesting subject, and you know, because it's basically a prison movie in the Civil War, but the prison's just a giant mud pit, and the way people treat it, it's a pretty interesting depiction that of an event in Civil War history that is really overlooked. But
because it doesn't follow that cartoon that everybody debates.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Didn't Frankenheimer do Reindeer Games as well?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, it was awful.
But, you know, he had a really great run. Like, he had Birdman of Alcatraz, Manchurian Candidate, The Train, Seconds, Grand Prix, and after that it kind of falls off. But he had a long career. I mean, he was working a lot longer than a lot of his contemporaries, I think, right?
I think he's actually the father. He's an illegitimate father of Michael Bay, right?
That's Michael Bay claims that.
Oh, really?
Frankenheimer's his father. Yeah. Michael Bay says that.
So Frankenheimer was the baby's daddy.
I think there was one film I saw. He's back in the late 80s or early 90s called, was it Year of the Gun or Way of the Gun?
Year of the Gun. Way of the Gun was the Christopher McQuarrie movie, which is really fun.
Year of the Gun.
That's a good movie. Andrew McCarthy?
Yes,
Andrew
that's
McCarthy
the one. Yes.
Sharon Stone,
yeah.
Am I thinking right?
Yeah, that went
straight to video. In the States, that went straight to video.
Good movie. I enjoyed it. I'd say it's probably one of the better ones he did in that period, for sure.
Did he do the Don Johnson movie, Dead Bang?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That was actually a good one, too.
Stuff. He did decent B-movie. The Challenge with Scott Glenn was like one I liked from childhood.
Here's one I forgot about, The Prophecy.
Oh,
oh wow!
Not the Christopher Walken one, but the
one with the melting bear.
Yes.
Oh God!
The one with Talia Shire.
That probably ruined his career right there. That's why he was doing stuff like The Challenge later on. The budgets got lower and lower for him because of Prophecy. Prophecy was a big money loser for Paramount. Sorry to people who give everything a fucking cult following on video, but yeah, it was a dud in theaters.
Yeah, it has like a baffling following.
Oh, everything does. Every stupid, shitty film from the 80s that I remember has like this insane following on the internet. Stuart,
you know what he's referring to, right?
Ghostbusters.
Every shitty.
Oh, he's talking about Halloween 3.
That's one of many. It's like they all do Prom Night and Terror Train and all this dumb shit. Visiting Hour.
Yeah, I saw Terror Train and I was like, this is a movie people like.
if you go to the Code Red page, the stuff they get the rights to, and everybody flips out over, it's like, what? That piece of shit they remember watching in Cinemax 1985? It was stupid then.
The whole Prom Night collection on DVD at home.
Oh my God.
Well, it was like $7 for the four movies, so I'm not going to complain about that.
Cheapness is no excuse for space on your shelf.
Well, John. I actually picked up all three seasons of Bret Michaels' Rock of Love for $6 last week.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no. I'm a sucker for those sorts of shows, you know? Like, what was it?
Found
with,
something to believe in.
What was that one, Hunter, with Flavor, Strange Love.
Strange Love and Love. Flavor of Love.
I've got Flavor of Love seasons. I got Strange Love. They sit on my shelf. Oh, and my favorite of them all, Sunset Tan, seasons 1 and 2.
You should see if they have Surviving Nuge.
Oh, no, yeah. I've never seen
Surviving
it.
Nuge was the only VH1 show I liked where they had to, all these dumbasses had to spend, they had to survive on Ted Nugent's ranch.
There's one show my kids really enjoyed watching when it was on was Andrew WK's Camp Chaos.
Oh,
you ever
seen
that?
Seen it.
It was a lot of fun, actually. I thought it was quite good. It wasn't a reality show. It was like a kid's game show. They got to do all these things like, climb walls and stuff. Yeah, it was a good show. So I'm sitting there watching. They're sitting there watching. I'm going, that's Andrew WK. They said, yeah, he's the guy who hosts it. They go, who is he? I said, he's a rock singer. I said, oh, okay. I kept watching it. They didn't care. Oh, we want to rate this sucker?
Yes.
Sure.
Stuart, what do you give it?
I'm going to give it a 4.5.
What?
No, I'm joking. No, 8.5 for me.
Very good.
Yeah.
John, what about you?
I give it a 9.
Yeah, I'd give it a 9 too. It's a classic. You got to see it. It's a milestone in conspiracy theory culture, I think.
Yeah. It also may be the first film, the very first film I've seen, the earliest film I've seen, that has the old movie gaff of a suppressor on a revolver.
Yes, that's right.
Which doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
Does not work, but they've done it on movies and TV, including Starsky and Hutch. It was done like every week, like an in-joke. So much that in the movie, Vince Vaughn has a revolver with a silencer on it or a suppressor
on
it.
Speaking of, you know what my favorite Manchurian Candidate remake is?
What's that?
Zoolander.
Easily the best one.
It's the same plot, pretty much.
I still haven't seen Zoolander 2, which is like the most hated film of the year.
So yeah, it is. It came and went, and it was despised. I almost want to check it out of curiosity.
Leonard Malta was like, it's the first movie I walked out of.
No. The first movie I walked out of was Inherent Vice, so there you go.
Really?
Yeah.
Still haven't seen it.
I walked out of Pitch Black with Vin Diesel.
Oh, that's right. I remember you telling me that.
Literally 20 minutes in. Once that girl from Once Were Warriors was killed, her character was taken out. I was just like, I'm just done with this. I've seen this shit before.
I've never walked out on a film.
I walked out on Pitch Black. I didn't pay for it. I had a free pass for a preview screening, and I just like, fuck this. And walked out.
I did get thrown out of the Three Stooges, but I've never walked out of a film. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it's, yeah.
When the usher threw you out, they go, you idiot.
No, it was the that was the female.
I'm warning you.
No, I called her a fucking bitch and I got thrown out.
Oh, well, that never works.
Yeah.
Jeez, I snuck in, big deal. I was enjoying it.
So. I was just stealing from you.
Stealing, please. I wasn't more like people was lined up waiting to get a seat they'd pay for. It was fucking empty just about. So, oh well. Never mind. But, these things happen.
But and I would also recommend that you avoid the Jonathan Demme remake. It's good. But and real quick, what did you guys think of the supposed like incest undertones between Raymond Shaw and his mom, Angela Lansbury?
I didn't really pick up on it.
It's more graphic in the book, supposedly.
I've heard the book is pretty full on with it. There's like a moment where she kisses him on the mouth, but you could almost read it as motherly. You could read it either way. But I didn't really pick up it because Raymond seems to hate his mom so much.
Yeah. I do want to ask you guys, who did you find better looking than the women? Janet Leigh or the one that Raymond Shaw ended up marrying?
I gotta say that Leslie Parrish.
Yeah,
I think she's stunning.
Oh,
she's way hotter.
She is what they call a head turner.
Yeah,
and that shape of hers was just fucking outstanding.
My god, I was melting in my seat when she comes to Raymond when there's the flashback of them meeting. And she's on that bike. I was like, oh my gosh. I was just melting.
We've said it before, and I hate saying like, oh, the old days were better, but man, women look better in movies.
Way better.
Like, it is glamour. Like,
if you get that Frankie Avalon Beach Party box set and look at the women in those films, and it's just frightening.
Really?
How they don't look like that anymore. Just don't. Although the women just had better bodies back then. I don't know what it is.
I will bring up, last night I was at work and I was on the road for work, and there was a billboard of a so-called woman advertising something. I can't remember what it was. Maybe a bra or something. Like, seriously, no shape. Flat as a fucking surfboard. All the way up and down. No shape whatsoever. And I looked at it, I said, terrible. No shape. No curves, no womanly figure, no nothing. Looks like a boy with long hair. It's all, and it's like, appealing.
That's because gay men run that industry.
It's true.
It's run by gay men.
It's true.
It's totally it. Gay men run the film business. And it wasn't the case in the 60s. They knew how to cast beautiful looking women that made straight guys, nowadays, it's all run by gay men.
And women, too.
Yeah,
women and gays running everything.
Pretty much.
I know people like to say it's the Jews, but they're not the ones making those decisions.
No. And it all that's the pushing of a fashion model as a sex symbol, even though fashion models are picked for their skinniness, because clothing simply looks better in a photo on a very skinny model.
Well, that's why so many actors are tiny people.
Yeah.
Like, you look at Tom Cruise. He's a teeny weeny little guy, but he looks good on camera, you know?
Exactly. Bruce Lee was a very little guy.
Oh, Bruce Lee, well, you know, you'd be shocked.
And looks awesome on camera, but he was a little guy.
Yeah, he looks like a god on camera, but if you met him, you'd be like, who's this little twerp, you know? And then he'd kick the shit out of you.
Yeah, he would.
Exactly. He was built like a 12-year-old boy.
He'd give you, a one-inch punch. He'd use his penis. Oh!
But on film, looks like a giant. Looks like a god.
Yeah, because a lot of the shots are up shots of him. That's why. The cameras are filmed lower. And they're just
ripped, so his muscles look bigger and on the camera frame and everything. So, you know, 0% body fat.
He looked fucking horrible in Into the Dragon. He looked anemic.
Yeah, he does look. We talk about that. But, like Fists of Fury or something, there's that shot of him with his shirt off flexing. I mean,
Way of the Dragon is where he looks.
Way of the Dragon.
Yeah.
Way of the Dragon, he looks badass in that. He looks healthy.
But. He does. Like when he's doing that, Tai Chi or those stretches he's doing in the morning.
Cat stretches.
He looks fucking unreal, but yeah. Yeah, we've gone over that before.
Bodybuilders had posters of him on their walls. Like, even Schwarzenegger was like, yes, we looked at Bruce Lee for the definition. Because nobody else looked like that on film. You know, maybe Charles Bronson.
I just want to ask you guys, who do you reckon of all the martial arts stars come after Bruce Lee? Who's come the closest to his charisma and style on screen?
Mm-hmm. Tony Jaa, bro.
Oh God, he did that film. What was that film he did? Ong Bak.
Ong Bak. Yeah,
I saw that. I'm like, I don't need to see him doing one kick 15 different times. I just don't need to.
Yeah, it's not a lot of diversity in the fighting style there. No. It just doesn't. It's boring after a while. It's a combination of Muay Thai and Taekwondo, and you know, I guess you could say Jackie Chan in terms of projecting energy on camera and kind of creating that image that everybody knows. Like, they know, you know Jackie Chan as soon as you see him.
Yeah.
But as far as anybody else, not a lot of actors did that powerful one man versus eight people convincingly. And a lot of them didn't try. You watch the Shaw Brothers movies, it's mostly kind of one-on-one fights and stuff. So nobody was really trying to do that and look like a, you know, super badass. But, I mean, if you talk about who was a tough guy who was underrated, I would say Chen Weiman, who starred in a ton of films in the 70s and 80s. He's the villain in Super Ninjas. He's the head of the Japanese honor.
I am the leader of the ninjas.
Yeah,
now,
that guy.
Tell me your name.
Again, that guy, he's done so many films.
I'm sort of more referring to the commonly known ones like Jet Li and the ones that became Hollywood-based or got themselves a career in Hollywood.
Jet Li in the early films I thought was really something, and I think he got too wrecked up with injuries to be like a convincing performer later on. He's doubled
a
lot.
Here's the thing. Bruce Lee didn't live that long. So.
Right. He only made 4 movies.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but he left a legacy of his work. So, you know, obviously, it's basically what he's done martial arts has watched Bruce Lee movies. So, yeah,
I think Sonny Chiba. I seriously think Sonny Chiba in the 70s Japanese films, if you watch a lot of them, I think he gets better and better with every movie, and I think he's pretty really good actor, very charismatic, had a really great physique, didn't, you know, lifted weights, but probably didn't look like it, that sort of thing.
What
just looked powerful.
What about Sammo?
Like, Sammo I like a lot, tremendous performer. I think of him more as an innovative director, though.
Okay.
Like, he really changed that business in the 80s in Hong Kong. He's the one who started, instead of doing the master shots of those fight scenes, he would do breakdowns. You know, he would kind of do them in editing, or he would film like the punch to the face and then have that edited in with the kick to the stomach and everything, like more broken down, but still really exciting stuff to watch. I think the best all-around physical performer was Xiao Ho. If you watch Mad Monkey Kung Fu, he's just a dynamo in that
it's
film.
It's not Hollywood, John. It's not. You're straying from the context.
Hollywood didn't want these guys.
That's the thing is, Hollywood wasn't like the best when it came to handling martial arts stars.
They don't. They don't like Johnny Ray Gasca. Can tell you those executives don't even like. They don't like martial arts movies. They don't care for them at all.
No.
And when they get these stars, they go, oh, this guy's big, but then they don't know what to do with them, you know?
Yeah, Tony Jaa's in the latest Fast and Furious film, and he's edited around where you can't even tell it's
Tony
Jaa.
The new Star Wars has the cast from The Raid in it, and they don't do shit.
Yeah, they don't do anything. They just show up.
That's ridiculous.
They just show up and go like, oh, we'll get you, Han Solo.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah, and they say it. Yeah, it's stupid.
There's a scene with the entire cast from The Raid shows up, and they don't use them to do Raid shit.
That, That turned me against the movie right away. I was getting into it, and they turned me against it.
That's ridiculous.
They're like, we'll get you Han Solo.
One of the best fucking action movies of the last 20 years, and they don't do shit with them. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's just they did the same thing with Jackie Chan in the 80s. I mean, you know, they didn't know what to do.
Oh, they're going to put him in another movie, and that's when those characters are really going to shine.
You know, they did the same shit to Terrence Hill in the 70s when they brought him to Hollywood. It's the same thing. They don't know what the hell. They never understand what made these guys appealing in the first place. Alain Delon, his career crashed and burned in Hollywood. He didn't care. He just went back to being the number one star in the world, except for America. And that's the way a lot of these guys accepted it.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, any other business we want to conclude? Ensuing candidate? Again, it's available. The Criterion Blu-ray is on sale at Barnes & Noble. It might be over by the time this drops, but, you know.
Oh, yeah. It will be.
Yeah.
I got to go get Touches In before I miss
it. Grab Touches In before that ends.
Exactly.
I'll get one of you guys to pick me up Ensuing candidate and mail it out to me. Thanks.
Oh, there we go.
Well, half that shit's like, oh, you're out of this reach and you can't order from here. Yeah, so it's pointless to me, you know?
Yeah, they won't send it to you.
Fuck them.
But I meant to do this at the top of the show. Be sure to visit our site, midnightmoviecowboys.com.
Before you do that, can you please go to www? For some reason, if you just put midnightmoviecowboys.com, it doesn't work. I don't know why that is. Somebody, I think our friend Butch Portillo, I got it right this time, Butch, pointed it out to me. Yeah. So. Yeah, you've got to go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com.
So, all right.
Well, it might have been good Trent. To know. Yeah, one of those two pointed out.
One of those guys. Yeah. One of our Facebook friends.
They always alert us. I was hanging out with Butch last week in Chicago.
Yeah, we saw you with a cock shaped straw in your mouth drinking a milkshake, or supposedly a milkshake. that's what you get for pissed on Halloween 3, boy.
It was a coffee milkshake. Six more days to Halloween. Oh, God, that crap. Yeah.
Anyway, so, but be sure to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes if you want to support the show. We're not going to ask for donations. We're just going to say, you know, go and do that because that helps us out.
We needed the money.
We needed the money.
Yeah. What else? Show suggestions. Help us out, because we're starting to run, like a nun's nasty, we're starting to run dry, so...
Well, we decided what next week's show is going to be, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, that's next week, but, you know, sort of down the track, we're like, ooh, we're going to...
Well, no, give us any suggestions, we'll do them, you know.
We'll try. There are ones that are off limits, as we've mentioned before.
Yeah, there's a few we won't do, we're not going to shit on you if you, you know, no, we might just say, oh, we won't do that. We can't do that one. But, you know, but most stuff we're game for.
Pretty much.
Yeah. At least I am. I don't know. Anyway.
Italian horror. Oh, God. I might be sick that week, I think. I don't get the whole Italian horror thing. I just
I love that shit.
Oh, really? I just got Dr. Butcher MD in the mail.
I watched Blood and Black Lace from the Arrow Shelf.
Oh, I still have the VCI DVD. I haven't even opened it. I've had it for 10 years, haven't watched it.
That was one I've always wanted to see that I finally got.
Fucking useless WAP, whatever his name is.
Mario Bava?
No.
How dare you?
What's his name? Help me out.
Dario Argento?
Fulci.
These films are shit.
I don't know. The Beyond's great. I like Zombie. That's about it. I like House by the Cemetery.
Yeah, I love
the problem with Fulci is one out of four movies is good, and the others are terrible.
He's like the Takashi Miike of Italy.
Yeah, totally. That's like, and Argento always criticized him. He says, well, he's directing one movie, he's editing the next, he's writing the other all at the same time, and that was always his problem.
I do like Suspiria. Suspiria is great. I know it's Argento, but I think Suspiria is fucking
fantastic. I love Suspiria.
I watched Suspiria. That in years.
But, So, I mean, if you want to ask for a teen, of course, people are going to start asking for a teen horror now, just so I don't have to be on the show. They don't want to hear me talking.
Yeah, they don't want Stu with his profanities.
It's like, what can we suggest that Stuart won't be on? Oh, let's get some teen horror happening. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So,
we've only done one Kill Baby Kill, right?
Yeah.
We've just done Kill Baby Kill, and that's it.
Kill Baby Kill.
And that's all you need to say for Mario Bava. I don't think you need to say anything else. So.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That was done a few years back. Yeah.
Maybe Danger Diabolic or one of the weird ones.
Yeah.
a non-horror. Hercules in the Haunted World is a great one.
Knives of the Avenger.
Yeah, that was great. Cameron Mitchell with a dubbed voice.
Yes.
Kneel before Odin. You know?
This one we can do.
Suck on Thor's hammer, cuck. I think he said that.
We can do Almighty Thor. Have you seen that one? The Asylum, the Asylum's version of Thor.
With, I don't know. It seems like doing an Asylum movie is too forced.
With, Richard Grieco as Thor and Richard Grieco as Loki and Kevin Nash as Odin.
I've kind of banned Asylum movies from my viewing.
Like, I haven't seen one since Snakes on a Train.
No, I saw with Andrew Farmer. I saw Avengers Grimm, which was like Grimm's Fairy Tales characters, but done Avengers style.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, it was retarded.
What a shame.
We saw it in the theater too.
The actual founder and CEO was welcome. Was very happy to come on and do a show with us from Asylum.
Oh, well, cut this part out then.
Yeah, you might want to. Oh, we'll do Atlantic Rim and have him on.
Yeah, Atlantic Rim. We'll talk about how it's better than Pacific Rim.
It probably is.
Yeah, that's the thing is, I'm not kidding. I didn't like
it. So's having a root canal. I do. So's masturbating with a cheese grater.
Well, send us go to our Facebook page and give us show suggestions. You can email them to us, but the Facebook page will see them quicker.
Yeah.
And respond a lot quicker because we're right there. You can join our group. We don't bite much.
Oh, and also, just one last thing. If I'm getting a lot of Facebook friend requests. Yeah, I will respond back. If you're a listener of the show, please say so I know. To that Korean girl, apparently, in a bikini. No,
oh, that's a fake person. That's
yes,
not
I know. Real. I'm not. Yeah, please. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I get fake friend requests every day. But I see some people and I go, that person must be a listener because they don't look like a hot chick, you know?
Yes. Yeah. So if you're a listener to the show, send an IM saying, hey, I'm a listener. And then no problem, you know, that's fine. But apart from that.
If I get friend requests from like angry looking guys in small towns across the U.S. with like Confederate flags on their profile shots, I figure they're fans of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have guns. They're with their guns on the, you know, got a Viking Norse mythology stuff on their profile, and it's a fan of the show.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
All right,
certainly.
So yeah, but yeah, if you the same goes for any of us, just let us know because you know I don't know. I get friend requests from weirdos every day that I don't think are listeners to the show, so it's kind of hard to weed it out.
I'm getting more and more strangely.
I usually wait for you guys to accept them. If I say they're mutual friends, okay, probably listeners of the show. Then
we could do the Mike Barron strategy, which is accept everybody and then publish the message on Facebook.
I love it when he does that. He always does that. Hello, my friend.
Hello.
I find you hot. They're all the same.
I was like, I should start doing it. And then I was like, no, that's Mike's thing. Don't do that.
We exchange lovey messages. Like it's every day.
Yeah.
Just accept like
Mike Barron, the comic book author.
Creator of Nexus and
Badger.
Author of like 3 Punisher comics.
He publishes every fucking weird like spam message he gets on Facebook. He just does it as a status update.
I got an email the other day, like literally in my inbox. I don't know how it got there. How didn't get in the spam boxes? The header said, "Hello, I am from Nigeria." Click delete it straight away. I'm not even gonna bother with shit.
The Nigerian prince.
Yeah, I have $870 million to give you. I was like, "Fuck off!" Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
I think I will only accept a request from Fela Kuti Jr., and that's about it. And that's all I'll accept from Nigeria. And maybe that guy who's making – you heard Fela Kuti's music?
Who the fuck?
No.
Pretty whacked out. Ginger Baker did an album with him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like I have –
That doesn't say much. Ginger Baker did a lot of shit. He doesn't remember.
Oh, I know, but he did. Yeah, that kind of makes me go, okay, I kind of.
And also one of those filmmakers from Nigeria. Like, there's this crazy film industry over there where they're making, like, action movies, like, every week. They're releasing them on VCD.
You have to watch that. Beware of Mr. Baker. Oh, my God. It's a crazy fucking dog
movie.
When they're asking his black wife, what do you like? Is he a good father? She takes, 10 minutes to go, finally nod her head, yes.
The guy who made that documentary is a friend of Tom Jennings, and he was telling me about
Oh, really?
He said that guy really did get smashed in the face.
I would believe it. That would not be staged whatsoever.
Yeah. He said it's all real. So, but anyway, all right, let's wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up. Got a couple of ideas. I'll run by you guys shortly, but we hope to have some special guests over the next few weeks. With any luck.
Everybody, well, with that, I'm just going to go ahead and say adios.
Proud of your boy, Yuhuru, mahalo.
And stand by Sonny Kruger.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time.
Yeah,
that's why he wears the just little shorts on stage, so he can just throw them off afterwards.
No, he's always been known to be gay, but it's like he keeps a lid on it because apparently he thinks kids still buy his record. He
keeps a plug on it.
Yeah, keeps a butt plug on it too.
Exactly. Run.